He's involved in a number of businesses.
He's a great role model.
Telling it like it is, giving you both sides of the story. This is Katz at Night.
Great American, a great New Yorker.
Now, here's John Katzimatidis.
This is John Katzimatidis. This is Katz at Night in TGIF. Thank God it's Friday. And this is a TriCast. We're on WABC 770. We're on 970 AM The Answer and WLIR. And in the studio with us, we have two common sense Democrats. No Republicans. I guess they went home early.
We scared them off, John.
The Republicans went home early today. We have Judge Richard Weinberg, Governor David Patterson, and my sidekick Lydia Serrani. And we celebrated Greek Independence Day today, and you're from Albania.
Mm-hmm, my family.
We made the joke about Ukraine. It wasn't a joke. What do we call it? Wag the Dog.
Oh, Wag the Dog. Oh, yeah, because that's the movie. Albania was part of the whole Wag the Dog thing. So, but it's true, unfortunately. Here we are, the new reality. Well, we've got a great show for everybody tonight. We are going to have the provost of NYU, Catherine Elizabeth Fleming. She is an academic, a historian. She's also an honorary Greek citizen. We'll also be speaking, of course, it's Friday, with Larry Kudlow, Howard Lorber. He is a president and CEO of Douglas Elliman, also a fellow Greek citizen. Then, of course, we talk to Nicole Petalides, and she knows all there is to know. Fox Business, a former Fox Business correspondent. Dr. Peter Mikolos, he also will give us some insight on Greek medical history. But first,
and Larry Kudlow.
Breaking news, WABC.
We have General Jack Keane on the line. He's going to have the latest breaking news on Ukraine. He is a four-star general, former vice chief of staff, also the recipient of the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Welcome, General Keane.
Yeah, sure. Delighted to be here. Thank you.
General, what's going on? I understand they're still talking about making peace. Where do you think we are?
No, I think we're very much at war, and it's going to continue for some time. I believe from an excellent source that the Biden administration has been putting pressure on Zelensky to make a deal, and they've been doing that for well over a week. I think it's pretty shameful because what we have in front of us here is something we never could have imagined at the beginning of the war. The United States Intelligence Services told the president and a national security team of the United States, and likely talked to our European intelligence service as well, that it's likely that in 3 to 5 days, the Russians will take control of the capital city and topple the government. And now, a month later, and the Russians have been fought to a standstill by the Ukrainian military, so much so that they're actually conducting limited counterattacks and taking territory back. The ground attack has stalled. They still haven't taken a major city, although Mariupol is certainly close to that end result. And there really is an opportunity here that none of us could have imagined for the Ukrainians actually to win. And that should be the attitude that we have. That should be the attitude of NATO, should be the attitude of the United States. But it's not. And it's unfortunate. And I think people in the administration want to end it as opposed to win it. And there is an opportunity here that we should truly take advantage of for the sake of the Ukrainian people and the Ukrainian military that's fought so valiantly.
How do you think that we can, the United States and other NATO countries, how can we help Ukraine win it?
Well, we are giving them more equipment now than we have in the past. But if you listen to President Zelensky, he was speaking to the EU yesterday, all 27 member nations, and he said, please stop the pattern that it's been for a month. And that pattern is too little, always late. His words, quote unquote. And what that says is that what happened here is people thought the regime was going to collapse very quickly, and the equipment we were giving them would be used in an insurgency against Russia, who's occupying the country. So that colored the kind of equipment we were giving them. And also how much we were giving them was a factor, and the speed at which we were giving them. And that's why Zelensky's been complaining all along about it. Well, after a week or two, it was obvious that the regime was not going to fall, and they were fighting valiantly. And what we are involved in is high-end conventional war using very sophisticated equipment, obviously airplanes, ships, missiles, tanks, and the like. And that is what is needed, a full-throttle commitment to get him everything that he needs. And he's been asking for airplanes, and there's plenty of them out there. We don't have them, but NATO states definitely have them. He wants some tanks. And, of course, he needs air defense systems, long range, short range. And we've given some of them, but this is going to go on for weeks, and we have to sustain it. What the Ukrainians have, so you understand, is they have displayed something that the Russians haven't displayed, the skill and the will to fight. And what they need is the capability and resources to assist them in doing that. And that is, I would have hoped that as a result of the NATO meeting yesterday, that a public policy declaration would have been made that the Ukrainians have turned the war around much to their favor, and we have an opportunity here to drive the Russians out of Ukraine. And we're going to go after this as much as we possibly can. We're seeking a victory, not an end, a victory. And that is not happening, in my judgment.
General, it's Richard Weinberg, sir. I want to ask you, I thought when I heard about President Biden's statement about use of chemical weapons in response to the Russians using it, it was a very tepid statement. What's your view?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And here's another point. I mean, they met behind closed doors, and likely, I'm talking about NATO members, 30 nations, likely, obviously, that issue had to be on the table. The Russians have been waving weapons of mass destruction, chemical particularly, nuclear certainly also, but likely using that is least likely. But they've been waving it in front of us, obviously, as an intimidation and brinksmanship weapon in front of us, certainly to force us not to take aggressive action. And we should have had a statement, a public policy statement, coming out of NATO that everybody agreed to in terms of what is our position. And we didn't get it. The chief of NATO, Stoltenberg, Secretary General, was wanting to answer a question on that, and he gave something of a tepid answer. President Biden didn't make a statement about it, but he answered a question on it, and I think his answer produced many more questions than an answer. I think a public statement should have had some kind of content in it, my words, that if the Russians use any form of WMD, it is absolutely unacceptable. We will not let that stand. There will be decisive consequences as a result of it, and all options are on the table for NATO, period. I don't think we get into specificity about what those options are. That would be a mistake because it takes away the leverage we have to select that option. But we didn't get anything like that, and it's unfortunate. And hopefully the president's going to speak to the nation tomorrow, and I hope he deals with this issue in addition to the resolve and determination we have to see this thing to the end with the Ukrainians.
And General, I mean, what kind of backdoor relationships are there where the United States is negotiating with Russia and giving them $12 billion on behalf of Iran? And then they couldn't make their monthly payment to the bonds issue. And they let them make the monthly payment out of their frozen funds. I mean, there was
it doesn't make any sense. I mean, this the Iran nuclear deal, the administration started with the premise that we were going to lengthen the deal. That means the sunset clauses that are in it at the 10-year mark, you can go to a threshold level of capability at the 15-year mark. There's no restrictions. All restrictions are removed, and you can develop a weapon. We're coming up the 10-year mark in 2025. And this deal we're making is clearly a pathway to a nuclear weapon. And the windfall, the Iranians are going to get billions and billions of dollars from which for them to use that money for malign behavior. All of the rockets and missiles that have fallen on Israel through the years, they all come from the IRGC, or the Iranian Republican Guards. That's who provides that weapons, and they got a windfall of money as a result of the original 2015 nuclear deal to do just that. And it fuels the civil war in Syria and fuels the war in Yemen and as a result of it. And we're going to give them more money to create that kind of behavior. It's really unfortunate. And here we are using the Russians to help negotiate on our behalf with the Iranians to get this deal done. At the same time, we're supporting an effort to sustain a war that the Russians have started with a partner country of ours in terms of Ukraine.
And I understand outrageous. Your friend, General Meany, he's made a statement that he's not communicating with his counterparts because they're not answering his calls. But obvious, President Biden and Putin are communicating on the other side. So who do I need a scoreboard to find out who's on whose side?
Yeah. Well, the Russians, despite the propaganda they put out, they always put out that they're negotiating. But this is a ploy. It happened before in eastern Ukraine in 2014. It's happened in Syria time and time again. Every ceasefire that they've ever entered into in the past, they always violated. They always have negotiations going on because it's part of their propaganda and information campaign. They want to look like they're willing to bring this horrible thing that's taking place to an end. And the fact is, they're not willing to bring it to an end until they're able to achieve, their objectives. And they're sticking with this. And the diplomacy effort is just not real. It's propaganda.
Well, General, thank you so much for everything you've done for our country and continue to speak out for our country. God bless you and God bless America. And we do need God's help in this.
Yeah. You're absolutely right about that, John. Thank you very much.
Thank you
so
much.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you. And I understand now we have a true Helene on the phone.
We have Dr. Catherine Elizabeth Fleming. She is an academic and historian. She has been in the provost of NYU since 2016, basically the dean of all deans. In 2016, she's an honorary Greek citizen, and she specializes as a historian in the modern history of Greece. Welcome to Cats at Night.
Thanks so much. A pleasure to be here.
And you know why Kathleen loves me? Because me and her husband have the same birthday.
Oh, and she's also the Alexander Onassis Professor of Hellenic Culture and Civilization in the Department of History at NYU as well. So
that's true. And John is right as well. But, John, that's not the only reason.
Okay. Tell us, you've developed a love for Hellenism. You're an honorary citizen. Tell us about how you developed the love for Hellenism. I mean, you do wonderful things for NYU. NYU has become a world power. Talk to us about your Hellenism.
So thanks so much. I had an incredible experience. Sheer luck brought me as a teenager to Crete at the age of 18. And I did something that my parents weren't excited about, which is that I dropped out of college for a year and accepted a job as a waitress in the south of Crete.
Wow. I saw that movie.
Yes, exactly. And it really totally changed the trajectory of my life because I had a chance to learn a new language, Greek, and to live in a very different place, a very different culture, one that I really, really came to love and then wanted to learn about academically. And it set the whole trajectory of my career.
Well, Kathleen Fleming is the provost of New York University. Mm-hmm. The university, I was 8 credits short from graduating. but I love the place. Tell us there was a brain drain in Greece.
So,
do you see any solution for that?
I'm going to talk a little bit about both things, both NYU and the brain drain in Greece. And I'll tell you, we very proudly claim you as a graduate, even if you're a few credits short. So NYU is really fortunate to have received the generosity of the Alexander S. Onassis Foundation, which made it possible for the university to build a program in Hellenic studies. And I was lucky enough to wind up with a position there teaching modern Greek history. And one of the phenomena that people who are interested in Greece are aware of these days is exactly what you referred to, that there are a lot of young people in the country, highly educated, very capable people, who don't really see an economic future for themselves in Greece. And a lot of people have been leaving the country for that reason. And the main solution is going to be for Greece to come up with meaningful employment for them at home. I'm engaged in a project in Greece that aims to do exactly that. With my partner in Greece, Sophia Papayuanu, we are running a big oral history project supported by the Stavros Niarchos Foundation. And we're employing hundreds and hundreds of young Greek people, training them and having them go out to interview their family members and bring us their stories. And at the same time, we're giving them something really interesting to do and a paycheck. So Greece needs more meaningful forms of livable employment. Otherwise, it's going to lose a lot of really, really great minds.
Again, we're speaking with Dr. Catherine Elizabeth Fleming. She's the provost of NYU. Dr. Fleming, what made you fall in love with the Greek culture?
You know, it was so many things. I was an undergraduate in New York City myself at Barnard College, and it was a radically different lifestyle, a radically different landscape, a very different pace of life. And I came to really have a deep appreciation for the sort of instantaneous generosity that so many Greeks show, for a kind of cantankerous, but in a friendly way, argumentative spirit that in many ways is deeply intellectual and very, very appealing. And, you know, it was a place that just kind of allowed me to make it a second home and sort of loved me back. And it's a lot easier to be in love with something or someone when you're being loved back. And that was certainly the case for me with Greece for my whole life. I've been really lucky.
Kathleen, I love Greece. And we had a discussion. We had a panel discussion at today at lunch. And Father, our favorite priest, Father Alex, was there. And one of the problems I also brought up was the real reason for Brexit was they're tired of getting invaded in the UK and England by foreign people, and they wanted England to stay English and to stay the way they grew up. Now, Greece, they're getting invaded from all over the place. The European Union is for open borders. I want Greece to stay as Greek. I want Italy to stay as Italian. I want France to stay as French. What do you see a problem coming down the road on this?
Look, all of Europe is being confronted with a major problem. I think France is probably the leading European nation in terms of having to confront this problem because it's a country that has sort of defined itself by a form of Frenchness that I think is on the wane. But every Western European country, every European country in general has this problem. In the case of Greece specifically, I think one of the things that makes Greece's position particularly difficult is that a lot of the people who are arriving in Greece don't actually want to be in Greece. They are passing through Greece. And that has a very, very different kind of impact on a country if you have lots and lots of people transiting the nation. You know, for me, you know, I'm an example. One of the most critical things is that you learn the language and that you really, really can connect meaningfully to the everyday life of a place. And the extent to which people who are not Greek, and I say that as someone who themselves is not Greek, so I'm not going to comment negatively on others who aren't Greek, but the success of making a life in a new place really, really derives from your ability to connect to it culturally, linguistically, and to contribute to it even as you benefit from it. And as I say, all of Europe has to figure that out with large populations.
Yes, they do have to figure it out. We got a minute left before we have to break. Tell us, what else would you like to tell all Americans?
Well, you know, today is Greece's it's the equivalent of the 4th of July for Greece today, a very, very important day. And I guess what I'd like to tell all Americans as well as all Greeks is that the same values that propelled the Greek Revolution and the American War of Independence are values that we have to keep in the forefront of our minds today. Look at what's happening in Ukraine, what's happening to Ukraine, being done to Ukraine. And if we don't keep the same democratic values alive as the ones that propelled those movements, we are going to be in sad shape indeed.
Well, Kathleen Fleming, a provost of New York University, lover of Greece, thank you so much for coming on, and God bless you and God bless America. Thank you so much.
Thanks, John, for having me. Take care.
And when we come back, Larry Kudlow.
A common sense recap of the day's biggest stories. It's John Catsimatidis and Cats at Night on 77 WABC.
This is Cats at Night. John Catsimatidis here. And what the heck is going on with the economy? I don't know anymore. I'm going to listen to Larry Kudlow. Larry Kudlow, one of the best economists in the country. Where are we? Where are we going?
Well, those are good questions. We have higher inflation. It's going to go higher. I don't think the economy is very strong, but I don't think it's rolling over into recession yet. I think the stagflation that people are talking about is probably the right way to describe it. I mean, I think the first quarter is going to be about 2% real growth and probably about 7 or 8% inflation. Wow. So inflation is higher than growth. That's the definition of stagflation. The Federal Reserve has not done one single thing yet to deal with inflation. So hold on to your seatbelts.
I gave my friend a new description of inflation. I said, if you have $1 million and you could buy 10 Mercedes-Benz, if there's a 10% inflation, you could only buy 9.
Yeah, but could you buy Vladimir Putin's yacht?
Larry Kudlow, what did you think of Joe Biden basically saying, okay, you know what, gas prices are high, but you know what, this is the step in the right direction to zero emissions. Is he really that clueless, and do they think Americans are that stupid?
Well, he is that clueless, and they do think Americans are stupid. The problem is Americans are not stupid, which is why his performance on the economy and inflation is about 25 points below water, okay, underwater. But look, on that point, Lydia, it's worth noting that because of the war and because Europe wants to be less Russian energy dependent, there is a slight change in policy. Now, this announcement yesterday, they're going to try to put a lot more U.S. Liquefied natural gas into Europe. All right. They want to put another 15 BCMs into Europe in the next year and maybe another 50 BCMs by 2030. That's not a lot. I mean, it's about 10% of what Europe demands. But you saw the change. FERC, the Federal Energy Commission, did hold back on a rule that would have prevented any new pipelines. Now, we don't know the decision yet, but they are holding back instead of voting to pass that rule. And the Energy Department, which has been sitting on 6 applications for LNG operations. They did sign off on two of the six. There are four remaining. Now, does this mean that Biden is abandoning the Green New Deal? No, it does not. In fact, the Greenies are up in arms even about these small things. But it does show that in response to the war and Europe is running ahead of the U.S. We're behind Europe. Europe wants to import far less from Russia. And the European Greenies are actually now in favor of natural gas or LNG terminals. So that's a good thing. The European Greenies are much more realistic and pragmatic than the American left-wing Greenies. So I find those two points interesting. We'll see if it continues. Has there been a sea change in Biden policy? I doubt it. But because of the war, there has been some change.
Larry, it's Richard Weinberg. There's a new proposed rule over 500 pages coming out of the SEC where corporations have to give disclosure about what they're doing to mitigate so-called climate damage. Can you talk about that?
Did it actually come out?
They're out for comments.
Yeah, it's out for comments. It's an unmitigated, catastrophic disaster, absolute disaster. Again, it's using these crazy metrics, the so-called social cost of carbon, upstream, downstream. What it basically does is says to publicly held companies that you have to run your company. They're not just disclosing, Richard. They're telling them how to run their company, suppliers, producers, even customers. And everybody, they have to evaluate the climate impact, the carbon impact on the behavior of producers, of suppliers, even of consumers. Now, you can't do that. There is no way to do that, and there's no institutionalized way to do that. So in other words, the data you're going to get out of these companies is not going to be real data, but it's going to impose gigantic costs. Some people are estimating a $10 billion regulatory cost. This is Gary Gensler. I knew him in the Clinton days when he was pro-business. Now he's become a radical left-wing greenie. It's an absolute unmitigated disaster. And the SEC does not have a mandate to dictate climate policies to companies. It's the Securities Exchange Commission. It's not the Securities Environmental Commission.
It's overreaching. It's the same thing they have with the Federal Reserve getting out of its lane.
Yeah, well, we'll see about the Fed. We don't know yet. We knocked off Sarah Bloom Raskin. We saved America. We killed Raskin.
Kill the bill, kill Raskin. What's next?
Yeah. Metaphorically.
All right, what's the third thing? You're betting two out of three. What's the third thing?
Is something I said, the third thing?
Well, no, you said kill the bill, we killed it. You
oh,
said
yeah.
kill Raskin, we killed her. So what's next?
All I can tell you is there's so much bad news out there. The cavalry is coming. The cavalry is coming. I truly believe that. The question is, can we make it through the next 6 or 7 months? And we'll just have to work hard to do so. I'm always an optimist.
I think the companies are going to have a fantastic quarter because they're raising prices like a bunch of – what was the old expression? Like a bunch of drunk sailors. They want to stay in front of the curve on inflation. The food prices over the next 45 days are going to go to the moon. What's next? I mean, does that mean when people see great earnings on all the companies that the markets will go up?
Well, I think markets, which have risen the last couple of weeks, they've had pretty good moves. I think the reason for that is the markets do not fear the Federal Reserve. And as I said before, the Fed has not begun to fight. They are still buying bonds and injecting cash into an economy that doesn't need any more cash. They should be withdrawing cash by selling bonds from their portfolio. So the stock market is still basking in a wave or a sea of liquidity. And I think sometimes in the short run, inflation is a good thing. Nominal earnings go up. So that's okay. But beware, because, you know, the workforce, the consumer, the typical family, their wages have gone up 6% or so, but the consumer price index has gone up by 8%. So their real standard of living, their real earnings are falling. And at some point, that's going to be a problem for these companies trying to raise prices. So I would just say in the short run, enjoy it. But in the medium term, it's not going to be so good.
We got a minute left. Anything else you want to tell the American people?
No, I mean, I was very disappointed. You know, I want President Biden, when he goes to these international meetings, NATO meeting and so forth, I want him to tell us that he wants Ukraine to beat Russia, to defeat them. Okay, right now, I think that's not Biden's policy. It's like Reagan. I worked for Reagan many years ago when I was a kid. Reagan said to the old Soviet Union, we win, they lose. Tear down this wall. You're the evil empire. Vladimir Putin is an evil man. He's a war criminal. He should be treated as such. And one thing we should do, we should seize and confiscate his yacht. He has a $700 million yacht moored off the coast of Italy. He is sanctioned, so that means you can seize his assets. And he got that yacht by ripping off the workers of Russia, by stealing money. He is corrupt as well as an evil war criminal. And I regret the fact that Biden will not stand up to Vladimir Putin and that Biden is afraid to push for an all-out victory. Zelensky is so brave and courageous. The people in the Ukraine are so brave and courageous. The Russians are committing crimes against humanity, and the Ukrainians will not give up. It would be great if we lent them support, give them weapons, give them money, and give them moral support by going after Putin and embarrass Putin, embarrass him by seizing his yacht and creating a narrative that he is a corrupt politician who has literally stolen the work of the Russian families throughout that country. He should be blamed for that as well as his war crimes.
Larry Kudlow, thank you for speaking for our country all the time, and God bless you and God bless America. Thank you.
Thanks, John.
Thank you. And we have a break coming, and right after the break we have Howard Lorber, CEO of Douglas Elliman, has a lot of real estate in New York. I'd like to hear, and he loves Greece, and he became a Greek citizen. I'd like to hear what he thinks about the real estate in New York, too. Let's take that break.
John Katzenmatidis, 77 WABC.
Welcome back to the John Katzenmatidis Cats at Night show. We have another Greek citizen online. Who is it, John?
Howard Lorber, a good friend and CEO of Douglas Elliman, and CEO also, I believe, of one of my favorite companies, Nathan's Frankfurt. You can't go to Coney Island without having Nathan's.
Nathan's Hot Dogs.
Howard, how are you?
Great, thanks. Nice to be on. And happy to be on this year as a Greek citizen.
Well, you know, I was there when you were sworn in by the Consul General, along with Father Alex, and you were sworn in as a Greek citizen. Tell us about your love for Greece and why you wanted to be a Greek citizen.
Sure. So my mother's parents, so my grandparents on my mother's side, were born in Saloniki, Greece. And as many of other Jews that stayed, they left very early and came to the United States. They were basically teenagers, and that saved them from what happened when the Nazis invaded Greece. And my grandmother always told me stories that, you know, how terrible that everyone they knew and every friend they had and relatives were, you know, sent in the livestock cars to Auschwitz to be murdered. So I thought that I wanted to, you know, have some of that heritage to honor them and to honor a lot of the Greeks that did help to hide Jews. The Greeks, I think, got a bad rap in some regard, but there were plenty of Greeks. There were plenty of Greek citizens. There was plenty of Greek clergy. There was plenty of Greek police officers that helped hide the Jews when the Nazis were invading. And that's why I really wanted to do it, memory of my grandparents and all their relatives and all the Jews that were murdered. There was 100,000 Jews in all of Greece. I believe about 90,000 were murdered.
Wow. Wow. Now, how do you feel about Greek food?
Well, I grew up eating it. My grandmother did the cooking in my house, and so it was great for me. I remember in those days when I was going to school, most of the kids in my class were eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and tuna fish sandwiches. I was eating spinach sandwiches and tatama sandwiches.
Oh my God, we had pizza. Like that, I felt the same way.
We had Greek food at the studio today for Greek Independence Day. Now, you're also CEO of Douglas Elliman, and you have a big following here in New York City. Tell us about how you feel about New York, and how do you think are we going to open up New York?
Yeah, I'm bullish on New York. I've seen what's happened in this past year after they closed us down from selling and from doing anything in the city, and it didn't take long, and all of a sudden it became a bull market in the New York real estate. We had the best year by far of any year we've ever had. We did $16.5 billion of sales in New York City for 2021. And it's continuing in that trajectory. And so people probably don't remember, but really even before the pandemic, the market was going down. The market was going down because city government was terrible. They kept threatening new taxes. They didn't just threaten. They put new taxes in place. They put in a mansion tax. They raised the recording tax. They raised the transfer tax. And then they talked about putting in a pied-à-terre tax, which would mean if you had a second home anyplace in New York City, you would have a tax. In addition to your regular taxes, you would be paying a tax yearly. So it really, you know, stopped people from thinking about buying. And all that now is sort of, you know, past history. And I think we have a chance. I think that Mayor Adams really wants to do the right thing. What he says is really what he wants to do. It's not going to happen as fast as we'd all like it to. Don't forget, you have a city council that's really not that great. They're very, very progressive, and he's not going to be able to, you know, do everything quickly. But I think he has the will, and he will find a way. And he started already by, you know, having more cops on the street and making more arrests. And although he has to deal with, you know, as I said, the politics and the district attorneys that are not too good, he's going to make it work to the best of his ability. And we're surely in a better place today than where we were with the last mayor.
Howard Lauber, I agree with you 100%. I stand side by side with you that we need New York City to come back. And right now, Mayor Adams is our hope, and we support him 110%. Thank you so much.
And it's very interesting because we speak to a lot of people in different markets. And you know what? I think that everyone that I know, really, pretty much everyone that I know that moved to Florida, they didn't sell their apartments or their townhouses in the city. It's interesting. And also, we see now, as the world has opened up and people can start traveling again, what we're seeing is many foreigners coming wanting to buy a house or an apartment in the city. And what I think is really happening is that New York City is such a great attraction that New York City is going to become the number one second home house for the whole world. For the whole world.
Yeah,
everyone
I think you're
wants,
correct.
They come from, they want a place in New York City, and that's what's going to really help the city.
And Miami is going to become the capital of North and South America.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you so much, Howard Lauber, and we'll catch up real soon. And
look forward to it. Thanks for inviting me, and wish everyone
God bless
a great Independence Day.
Thank
and
you.
See you at the parade.
Thank you. God bless you. Let's take we're taking a break?
No. Do we have to take a break? No.
Okay, let's go to my next guest when I talked to Nicole a few minutes ago. With us today is Nicole Petalides. Nicole is a longtime friend. She's a friend. Her mom was a longtime friend and still is. She shows Greek immigrants can accomplish in media, in this city, in this country. Nicole, how are you this morning?
Oh, John Katsimatidis, it is wonderful to speak with you. Thank you so much for having me on your great WABC radio. I'm so thankful that you always include me in your Greek Independence Day programming. We did the wonderful parade together for 8 years. Greek Independence Day Parade on Fifth Avenue. 8 years in a row, we did that with our friend Ernie Anastas. And, you know, we are proud immigrants, proud Greeks, but Greek Americans, right? And I think you really hit the nail on the head, John, when you said it shows what, you know, when people come over and what they really can do. You mentioned my mom, Fanny Holliday, and she launched the Greek newspaper, Boyne newspaper, which she had for 20 years, and really taught me about media and journalism. And then
you've been in media forever.
Forever and a day. And so from there, I went on and I did a lot of business news, as you know, at Dow Jones, CNBC, Bloomberg, Fox Business. And now on Monday, it is my great pleasure to be back at the New York Stock Exchange. And I'm so excited to do this with TD Ameritrade Network, Schwab. It's a collaboration and it's another new network. I launched Fox Business on the very first day with Rupert Murdoch and Roger Ailes. And now we're really going to try and do this again here with TD Ameritrade Network. So it's exciting to have the opportunity to talk about business, particularly yourself, as you came over with nothing, worked hard, worked in business. And now, look, right, from the radio to the Christides to oil, real estate, you have your hand in everything, John. How's business been for you?
Well, you know, I am working very hard to make sure New York City survives, because right now the biggest problem in New York City is that the crime problem. We have licked the COVID problem. Now it's our turn to lick the crime problem. And if we fix the crime problem, New York will be bigger and better than ever.
Yeah, and, you know, that's what it's about. It's about resiliency, just like the immigrants and, you know, the Greeks. My mother came over on the boat straight to Ellis Island. In fact, she received the Ellis Island Medal of Honor, which I think you got, too, which I really am so proud of what she was able to accomplish, learning the language, learning business, and, you know, being very entrepreneurial. But it just shows the resiliency and how important it is that we care about our community, our nation, our children, our education. And to your point, New York City, where I live with my children, my husband and my children, has been an atrocity. I mean, just the crime, mental health issues, which I know we need to take care of, but terrified riding the subway. I got mace in both hands, John, morning, noon, and night. I just walk the streets with mace in both hands. And why shouldn't I, when you hear what's going on? And business leaders like yourself have really made this plea to Eric Adams and all the politicians to make some really key changes. And hopefully they're doing exactly that.
Well, Nicole,
I'm such a proud Greek American, and I really thank you for this opportunity. I have, obviously, both my parents were born on the beautiful island of Cyprus. My husband's family's from northern Greece, Kastoria.
Nicole, thank you for coming on, and it was wonderful of you. And let's catch up again real soon.
I look forward to it, and I'm hoping for the stock market to improve, for the 401ks and IRAs, so people feel really good about life overall and passing on to their children. John Katsimatidis, thank you so very much for including me on this important day.
Thank you, Nicole Petalides, and God bless Greece and God bless America.
Zito elas. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's a common sense recap of the big stories. It's Cats at Night on 77 WABC.
Well, we're back, and today is a Greek Independence Day, and who's one of the best Greeks I know? He's with us today. He's Dr. Peter Michalos. Peter, how are you today?
I'm doing great, John. I'm very proud to be an American of Greek descent, and the founding fathers, like Thomas Jefferson, said that they used the Athenian democracy as the basis to create our great country. And then Thomas Jefferson took lines like from a Epicurus of Samos, that all men are created equal with certain inalienable rights, and that's right out of Greek history. And Thomas Jefferson wrote to his nephew, if you want to become an educated man, you'd have to read the Greek historian Thucydides. and the other ancient Greeks, and they all were Hellenophiles. And that makes me very proud that the roots of American democracy were founded upon Athenian democracy. And I'm going to talk a little about history of medicine in Greece. And back in the days of Homer from 800 BC, and Homer of Chios described wound treatment when he was writing the Iliad, and he talked about how to treat those types of wounds. And ancient Greeks invented modern medicine. There was medicine in other countries before that, but the first one to organize it and actually create a code of ethics and the Hippocratic Oath, which doctors around the world take to this day. He was the first one to organize taking a medical history, asking patients about their environment exposure, their diet, their activity level, and that all came together. And moving on in history, we had doctors, I'm going to just hit on some of them, who created the Pap smear test, Dr. George Papanikolaou, who was a professor at Cornell, who came originally as an immigrant from Evia, Greece. That's why we celebrate immigrants. And he has saved millions of lives of women from cervical and uterine cancer with early detection. And it's even used in lung smears and biopsies to save millions of women. And we move forward in history now. We have fantastic Greek doctors, like even right here in New York, like Dr. Lorraine Chrysomalis, the gynecologist, the new generation, and Dr. George Florakis, the head of the eye bank in New York, saving sight. Dr. Effie Singus, the ICU specialist who saved many people in COVID. Dr. Dasiopoulos at Stony Brook, who was the chief of vascular surgery, who was one of the first to figure out that COVID was a clotting disease and started giving anticoagulation to people. Of course, Dr. George Yancopoulos, who trained at Columbia from Regeneron, who did the Aliyah injection that saves people from diabetic retinopathy and from macular degeneration. He also was the inventor with Dr. Christos Kyratsous at Regeneron, another Columbia fellow, who did the monoclonal antibody that worked great against the alpha and the delta variant, and also invented the Praluent cholesterol injection that not only lowers your cholesterol and LDL, but it reverses plaque and heart disease, which is quite amazing. Then we have the Dr. Kyratsous also invented the IV antibody for Ebola that saved many lives. Also, the newest antibody, Dr. George Skangos, invented in San Francisco from Vir Pharma, that is the one that's helping people with the Omicron variant. Of course, we have the great Dr. Roy Vagelos, who distributed ivermectin around the world. Everybody talks about it with COVID, but it was originally developed to kill onchocerciasis, which was the number one cause of infectious blindness in the world. In the 1980s, he distributed it free to the whole world and saved about 55 million people from going blind. So some of these things are amazing. Wow. And we also have to remember that the two highest recorded IQs in the world were Greek Dr. Evangelos Katsoulis in Thessaloniki, Greece, a psychiatrist, and another Greek, Nick Lycurgos from Lyon, France, who was also from Greece. So
Dr. Peter, I want to thank you. We have a heart out right now for our sponsor.
Not a problem.
And thank you so much for coming on. And there's so many Greek doctors. Let's go to that heart out right now. Thank you, Dr. Peter.
God bless America and immigration.
With us today is Robert Udanawe, and he is the CEO of Goya Foods. And we're so happy to have Goya as a sponsor for Greek Independence Day. And thank you so much, Bob.
Thank you. God bless you, John. Thank you so much. And congratulations to you. And thank you for having me on the show. And congratulations again on this special day. Goya is proud to celebrate with the Greek community and all ethnicities in their struggle for independence. We are a very blessed society here in the United States, you know, and my recent trip to Poland and the Ukraine border led me on a spiritual journey that solidified my beliefs in helping the children of the world. By combating child trafficking through our Goya Cares initiative. And today, Pope Francis celebrated a very special mass for the consecration of Ukrainians and Russians to the heart of the Immaculate Mother Mary. And today also marks a very important religious holiday in the Catholic faith, the Feast of the Annunciation. This holy day commemorates the day in which Mary was informed that she would be carrying the Son of God, Jesus Christ. Mary was the protector of her unborn child and would become the nurturing and loving mother that we know her to be today. So I would like to take a moment to reflect on those that we can protect, love, and nurture our children. They are our most precious gift from God. And while we celebrate and lift our glasses to toast today, I would like to take a moment and thank those people that stand up for their countries and beliefs to fight for their independence in God's name and for their children. I want to give a special thanks to John for pledging in advance that your collection for Ukraine will be used toward more food and supplies to the country through our Goya Gives initiative. Thank you always, John, to you, Margot, your family, my family, the extended WABC family, for your unwavering support. God bless you all, and Opa!
Opa! Well, thank you, Bob, and I stand side by side with you in helping the people of the Ukraine that are suffering a great deal today. And God bless you, too. And so we stand side by side. Opa! Well, let me tell you something. All the money we're collecting from the WABC Foundation, you go to WABCradio.com, hit that donation button, and every dollar, 100% that wherever we collect, we're going to give to the Ukraine for food. And we're going to donate it directly to Goya Foods, and Goya Foods at wholesale is going to get it to the Ukrainian people. Thank you all for today. God bless New York, and God bless America.